in the air, a little good news for a Monday. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principle Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaelis.
I think it's always good to start the week with good news. We've been doing a lot of analysis and, you know, this and that and another thing. I think it's good to start things out with good news so that people can start recovering from their gloom, despair, and agony on me.
Well, exactly. You know, we've talked about this on previous programs since the election about how it seems like many of the folks who are out there who consider themselves to be Christians, consider themselves to be conservatives, are in shock, Chuck. I mean, that's just all there is to it. They're in absolute shock over the re-election of President Barack Obama. Well, honestly, I don't count either you or I among those people who were in shock over it. We're a little surprised, and yes, we made an erroneous prognostication that the election would have gone to his primary opponent, Mitt Romney, but that didn't happen. But everybody is just saying, oh, things at the end of the world. Now, it may very well be for some people, and that's sad, but, you know, there's always opportunity, and there's always option, even in the light of something as unpalatable and unthinkable as the next 4 years of Barack Obama. And Chuck, we got a little taste of that on Friday of this last week. And honestly, it was one of those things that really didn't hit majorly in the press. You know, there are a few places that have reported on it, but it's a victory. And it's a victory for those of us who believe in religious liberties. It's a victory for those of us who believe in the fact that the Constitution is a document that should be followed in its original intent. And it's a victory for those of us who are saying, listen, we just have to weather this out really for about the next 13 to 14 months, and then his party will abandon him as a lame duck because they have to run for re-election. And so what happened on Friday, ladies and gentlemen, for those of you who don't know, is that United States District Judge Reggie Walton had a case in front of him, a request in relation to the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, specifically the mandate that was triggered that would require a company to provide employees with contraceptive coverage under the plan. As we talked about on previous programs, Chuck, you know, many folks in the Catholic faith, their organizations from Franciscan University here in Steubenville, Ohio, all the way to various private entities, sued the federal government over that provision, claiming that it was against their liberty of conscience and their religious teachings to pay for contraception. Well, the Catholics weren't the only ones. We also had a number of evangelical Christian organizations who also filed lawsuits. And when this lawsuit, which was filed by Tyndale House Publishers, got to U.S. District Judge Reggie Walton, he agreed with them and said, and I quote from the case, that the company, that the government does have broad and compelling interest in promoting public health, but the question is, quote, whether the government has shown that the application of the contraceptive coverage mandate to the plaintiffs further disease compelling interest. And he underlined to the plaintiffs. In other words, he's basically saying, I'm going to take this on a case-by-case basis, but it doesn't apply to them because they are really a religious entity, and that's an unconstitutional mingling of church and state. He didn't come out and say it exactly that way. That's kind of the implication here.
Well, it's interesting that he says that the federal government has a compelling interest in, quote-unquote, promoting the general health. That's not the purpose of Obamacare. It's not promoting the general health. It's specific health care that's being promoted. And
that's
whether
right.
or not the federal government has a compelling interest or not, the answer is really no. There is no health care mandate in the United States Constitution. The idea that somehow the federal government can do it better than the state or even better than the local governments is simply laughable. It's this idea that somehow you have to pour gobboons of money into it, and the only way to get that money is at the federal level. When in fact, Barry, economies of scale don't work out that way. And the reason it doesn't work at that kind of level is not so much as the amount of money that gets collected. It's the amount of money that actually gets distributed.
Yes.
It turns into a trickle because of the size of the bureaucracy that you need to distribute the stuff. So the fact is that this idea that somehow the federal government has a compelling interest, there's neither a constitutional nor an economic interest in running healthcare. That being said, I'd have to agree with the judge in this insofar as, you know, it is an intermingling of the separate entities of church and state. And the Obama administration seems to have understood that because one of their arguments, I had to laugh about this. The Obama administration opposed the order arguing that Tyndale House Publishers isn't religious enough for an exemption from the mandate, a component of Obamacare that forces employers, regardless of their moral or religious convictions, to provide insurance coverage for abortion-inducing drugs, sterilization, and contraception under the threat of heavy penalties. Well, what's the threshold level of being quote-unquote religious so that you aren't covered by that? And the answer is, so according to the Obama administration, is it doesn't matter. You could be 100% religious or 0% religious. You still have to buy and kick in for abortifacients and abortion.
Yeah, and that's the big problem with this, Chuck, is it's totally subjective and it's left to the government to decide. Well, District Court Judge Walton decided he didn't quite like that idea. And, you know, he basically sat down and he took a look at the arguments that Tyndale House Publishers had put forward in their argument and basically said, no, we're not doing it that way. We're not going to have this, because he said it puts companies like Tyndale in the, quote, untenable position of either violating their own religious beliefs or facing financial penalties for failing to comply with the federal law. And he basically says that when the Obama administration issued exemptions to exclude millions of women from the insurance mandate, they can't argue that they're promoting women's health while at the same time excluding women from it. So the waivers factored into this judge's decision, saying, hey, if you're going to give waivers to certain companies, your compelling interest is not public health, nor is it women's health. It's specific, and therefore you can't use that to specifically target somebody because of their religious beliefs and put them in that position, which I thought was a very well-reasoned and well-argued point by this federal judge.
Well, absolutely. But look what's going on with some of these other lawsuits, Barry. Some of the first ones have already been dismissed. For instance, the story talks about Judge James E. Boasberg of the D.C. Federal Court threw out a lawsuit by Belmont Abbey College in North Carolina. They're the first one to file suit against the mandate. He dismissed the suit because the Obama administration is revising the initial rule that released forcing religious groups to pay for the drugs that violate their conscience and beliefs. Well, when's that going to come out? And in fact, what's it going to say? The fact is that this judge had the opportunity to basically say, okay, this does violate the separation of church and state. You can't force it. Therefore, you're going to have to revise your rule. Instead, he decided to wait and see what the Obama administration came up with before allowing the suit to proceed. Well, that was the entire purpose of the suit. This
mm-hmm.
is a search.
That's right.
The judge should have stepped in and said, yes. Well, really, what should have happened is the Supreme Court should have found the whole darn mess unconstitutional. But the Supreme Court doesn't do that anymore. Judge Roberts was so scared of being seen as an activist judge that instead what he did was he took the whole law and rewrote it. Well, okay, that's water under the bridge. The fact is that the Supreme Court found it constitutional. That doesn't, of course, mean that it is constitutional.
No, because we talked about those arguments before, that they're fairly specious.
Oh, they're completely specious. And the fact is that, Barry, as we've discussed on many times before, the Supreme Court is not the final arbiter of the constitutionality of a law. Article 10 of the Bill of Rights, the 10th Amendment, makes it clear that the states are the final arbiter of the constitutionality of laws that affect those states, that usurp their powers and authorities, and not just the states, but local governments and the people respectively. And that's one of the problems we've run into. I've recently been in some discussions because there are a number of states that have laws to nullify, Ohio being one, to nullify Obamacare. And that's still going to play out in the courts, but I will, with the current attitude, I will say that Ohio will buckle under and take the exchange that's handed to them rather than applying for the exchange that they're required to apply for. And that's going to be a sad day for me because I know a lot of people who put a lot of time and effort into getting the Ohio Constitution amended to not allow that, thinking that that was going to solve the problem. And of course, what we really need to do is get the state legislatures to look at things like nullification so that groups like Tyndale House can go to the states and redress for grievances and say, okay, this is a tyranny, because it is a tyranny. This is an encroachment on personal liberty and conscience. And that's the bottom line. And that's what this federal judge has basically said. He said, this is an encroachment on the idea of personal conscience and liberty. And that's a good ruling. But then again, you know, he's trying to take some kind of a middle ground. Well, this is not a question in which you can take a middle ground, because what will eventually happen is that middle ground will be taken by the other side. And then in the way that they always do, they just basically simply continue to move the lines forward and wipe out the position that you've taken, because you do have this middle ground position. So there are a number of these suits that are out hanging fire. And this may have an effect once they see the legal reasoning in this. That's why this is an important case. Once the legal reasoning from this case is seen, other judges may catch on and say, okay, this looks like a good argument. However, with the level of legal discourse that has gone on in this nation now for about the last 70 years, really since, well, maybe even longer, maybe approaching 80 years since the 1930s, when Roosevelt basically attempted to pack the court and the Supreme Court began suddenly to see things his way because they didn't want to lose their prestige as Supreme Court. And then suddenly we started bringing in more and more and more justices who took a living, breathing document view at both the Supreme Court, the appeals court, and the district court levels. We have had a rapidly encroaching federal government based on the idea that the Constitution has no limitations on government in it, that the Constitution can be twisted to mean anything that we want it to. And that includes forcing companies, Catholics and Protestants and people of faith who adamantly oppose the murder of infant with their tax money, forcing them to kick into the funds that are then doled out to places that do those things.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And, you know, Chuck, this, like I said before, you know, this is some good news. And we know it's temporary because this was a preliminary injunction, but U.S. District Judge Walton did set a good tone with this, because instead of saying, well, they've met these policies, they've done this, you know, because Tyndale itself is self-insured. The company is a self-insured company, and basically, so that means they provided their own insurance and paid directly for the services, and that kind of changed this case around, because those other cases you mentioned, they said the company wasn't able to avoid a mandate because they used a third-party insurance company, and the outside insurer was providing the services, and so therefore they couldn't argue that it was a religious base, which is specious in itself as well. But, you know, Judge Walton went right after the administration on this, basically saying your own policies are excluding the women that you're arguing would be excluded if this company doesn't fall under your mandate. And basically also said that the administration never presented evidence that the exact contraceptives that Tyndale objects to, which are intrauterine devices and morning after pills, they never proved that they're critical to promoting women's health. And there's a reason for that, Chuck. They can't.
That's
they
right.
cannot produce the data that says that these are critical to women's health. So Judge Walton has set up the structure, even in the preliminary injunction, for the potential tearing down of Obamacare across the board. If this is the way it has to be done, by states nullifying Obamacare's reach, and we're going to talk about that on a subsequent show about what Ohio's been doing as far as these healthcare registries and exchanges that Obamacare is trying to force on the states, to individual companies suing over each part of this mandate, and of course these religious base like Tyndale House winning because it is an interference upon their religious beliefs, and basically saying that that is violating their liberty of conscience, violating their religious freedoms, and thus violating constitutionally based protections. Chuck, you couldn't really ask for better, except for if John Roberts would have actually done the right thing and ruled it unconstitutional to start.
And you know what, Barry? With that, we're out of time.
Okay.
Join us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.